Sometimes you might feel trapped between the right and the left. No one listens when you say taxation is theft.
But there's a place where people know harsh government brings tears. So grab some blue and adrenochrome. Let's make the timeline weird. Friends against government. Friends against government.
They're your
Hey guys.
The very best friends.
The very first Q posts were just shit posts by some anon, and then they got fucking hijacked, you know, basically 51%ed by some dipshit YouTubers who have been feeding the flames since then to make money on YouTube's ad algorithm.
Right. So yeah, I mean, they
like Q is literally just a publicity stunt for shitty YouTube channels, and somehow it's taken over the dominant discourse in American conservatism.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Well, I think Glenn Beck used to see, this is what's weird to me, is people like Glenn Beck and the other guy who got fired or had to step down because he was getting touchy with the women. The guy who said,
O'Reilly.
Fuck it, let's do it live. O'Reilly. O'Reilly and Beck and whatever his name is on the radio, Limbaugh, they serve as, I would say, the intellectual producers of the conservative movement at the same time that Anonymous was like an active vigilante policing network on the internet. And I think that at some point, as the power of both of those groups faded, there were like splinters who came together, and that's where Q came from. Like hopefuls.
Well, so it's important to recognize the intellectual heritage of Q, if you can call it that, though, because what makes Q so popular and why I was able to take these routes so easily is because that's been the predominant theme and ideology of right-wing late-night radio since the late 80s. You know, it's the conspiracy continually.
So Q is just like Q is just the next generation of that, like the next wave of that, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh God, they're getting to be all internet-y. That'll be fun.
You know, every generation of right-wing conspiracy theorists believes that they have somebody on the inside just waiting for the signal to ride out and save them. And that's one of the profound flaws of the fucking conspiracy right-wing. At least left-wing conspiracists are smart enough to realize no one's coming to save them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. French Nobel Prize-winning scientist Luc Montagnier has claimed that the novel coronavirus originated from a Wuhan laboratory while attempting to manufacture a vaccine against HIV. During an interview with the French news network, the Nobel laureate who co-discovered HIV... Oh, shit! Really?
Yeah.
That was what he did? Okay, so the guy who co-discovered HIV says that the presence of HIV elements in the genome of SARS-CoV-2 raised suspicions against possible man-made virus. Professor Montagnier, God, I love that name, said that the Wuhan City Laboratory has expertise in this area since they've been working on coronaviruses since the early 2000s. It's amazing. It just writes itself.
Doesn't it just?
It just writes... You gentlemen know why I've been having to dig into conspiracizing myself, and I was telling you this, Paz, it's really difficult to create a conspiracy theory.
Can't make this stuff up whole cloth.
You
it's
really
impossible.
Can't. You have to have things that you can tie that scarlet thread through, and whatever you tie the scarlet thread through in this case is they're very large ties. They're very obvious ties. Professor Montagnier.
They're using a rope instead of thread here.
Yeah, they're using the scarlet rope. That's right. to hang us with. Professor Montagnier said that the Wuhan City Laboratory is... So, I don't know. But that was it. That's what he said, Paz. So did he back up the claim of the presence of HIV elements in
the
genome?
Yeah, so he's defending the presence of some sort of HIV or HIV-like
the word he being used
in the
is
RNA
elements.
Structure.
Yeah.
But here's the difference. He did not say that it causes HIV.
No.
And some retards on the internet are saying that's what he said. So it's a very important differentiation.
Okay.
Some
so this brings
on the
up our specialty, by the way.
Yeah, right.
So
that hit a little close to home inadvertently.
Oh,
this
sorry.
Brings up the Bill Gates. This brings up the Bill Gates specialty. So
is it just
to
a fuck sleeves kind of day car?
Yeah. Fuck
yeah.
Nice.
So welcome to the show, Car Campit. You're our guest for today. First of all, great lack of sleeves for all the listeners. Car's wearing a sleeveless shirt and a Como hat, which is pretty, pretty great. Car, what do you think about the fact that we're getting some news dumps of a hack of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the WHO that substantiate the idea that the Bill Gates Foundation has been working on an HIV vaccination at the same time that Mr. Luc Montagnier says presence of HIV genome has been found? What do we think?
Well,
course, the Wuhan laboratory is funded by the Bill Gates Foundation.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, it's super early. And this is, again, the first few hours are when the most disinformation seems to, fly back and forth. So I'm just waiting for some things to settle out. But I kind of had in the back of my mind, I was kind of like, when is this going to happen? Like, the bounty on this in term, is just huge. This is it's been a worldwide
event.
You're
talking about the hack? You're saying that a hack was almost bound to happen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these security systems are notoriously shoddy. Not my area of expertise, but that's pretty public knowledge.
Did you, what kind of hack it was? It was obviously a password hack. So,
well, it may have been a password leak.
Oh, password leak. Regardless, so did you see some of the passwords that were being used?
No, I didn't. I just dropped that link in the chat 10 minutes ago, but I've been working, so I haven't been
My
able
favorite
to.
One that I saw was the email, and I don't, it's leaked, so I'm just going to continue to leak it. The email that was bill.gatesfoundation88. Do you know the password that was tied to that one? Bill Gates what? Foundation.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, so there's a few things here. One, I think it does matter whether it was a leak or a hack. It's gonna be.
Do you?
Well, yeah, because a leak.
Yeah,
means
that's
it came from
a huge
within.
Difference.
And a hack,
I see what
means
you're
somebody
saying.
Stole it and got access. And
I see what you're saying.
That will be a fairly important distinction going forward. It's not the biggest thing. Like,
I was gonna say,
if the information is right, the information is right, and that's a little bit of a But I mean, if it was a hack, then people were going to be like, oh, well, they stole the information. And then, that canard, that they'll just use that.
So
but
in this
was,
case, like for example, similarly, something like when Bradley Manning leaked information, it was a leak because he came from inside. So the difference being this could be either an employee or an affiliate from the inside.
Yeah.
That would be bigger.
Or a spy or something. I mean, who knows?
Ooh,
I don't think ultimately, particularly with respect to the information that we glean from it, I guess that part doesn't really matter as much, but that is going to be an interesting side story to watch is where the hell did the info come from? If this is real, which it in looking at it early, it does look to be corroborated by kind of a lot of people. So, I mean, I don't know. It looks like it might be real. And if that's the case, there's two more things. If it was a leak, do they know who leaked it? And if not, they're still in there. And could they leak more? And if
it was three, and this almost, thing, it was three separate organizations. So whoever it is,
what is it? Three separate organizations?
Yeah, right. You're right. There's easily could be people working for all three, but then that would thicken the plot and also kind of de-incentivize somebody from leaking.
A lot of side quests on this one.
You have to consider though, if you do think it's the same organization, how few people are working for all three at one time, perhaps, that it might de-incentivize them from leak. I don't know. Most of these things are leaks, right? I mean, again, Bradley Manning, the way Julian Assange managed to get all his stuff, where it's leaks,
bet it's probably closer to a 50-50 split than saying the majority of them are leaks.
Well, it'd have to be especially fast.
We were talking about Anonymous earlier, and a lot of times they would do overt hacks. You know, they didn't.
Yeah, but of one group usually, like of one either one IP address or one website, like that's fine. But coordinating three separate organizations is, even if it's like one, like from the inside, then I can understand that. But from the outside, if a group of people hacked those three groups or managed to get leaks from those three groups and released them all at the same time, they work pretty quickly, because you can imagine what they're probably doing now at the Bill Gates Foundation.
Besides shitting their pants.
Scrubbing
up.
Shit.
Yeah.
Going like, let's find the rest of these fucking hard drives.
They're on they're on the red phone with DC and leaders in China and being like, hey, we've got a situation. If this is in fact all legitimate,
they're scrubbing, they're destroying all the hard drives of Bill Gates talking about the 17 girls in India that died from they're like, where's that hard drive specifically? Let's get rid of that one specifically. Oh man, it's weird, because like this is the thing with Bill Gates, obviously, like he's such a powerful person that like you want to wonder what he's involved in and whether or not he emails about it. So I really hope people like get through this.
So, and that's part of the problem too, like even him, he's still a fucking boomer no matter how powerful
he is. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
He's definitely has shitty OPSEC. There's no way
he definitely does. Definitely does.
Yeah, and that's the double-edged sword here, and that's why I was waiting on something like this to happen. And again, I'm going to qualify everything with, if in fact this is legitimate, we don't know yet. But
that's true.
If it is, you know, if it's not, then we don't have a story. We got nothing to talk about, and fine. But if it is, that's the reminder of this double-edged sword that you know, information is almost the new warfare, and. Just as, you know, we can all, you know, worry about government surveillance and all this and all that, like they're fucking exposed too, because you've got this kind of shit happening. And whether this one's legit or not, other ones all have been legit. Now, it's a little bit hard for them to get coverage sometimes, but man, I think a lot of people are going to be asking a lot of questions about this thing or will be economically incentivized to ask questions about this in that they've had their business shut down.
Sure. And, amen. Fucking so, amen.
I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know how I don't know how it's going to play, but I think there are some really interesting storylines developing that certainly could have some ramifications outside of what "quote unquote" they want. You know,
that's right.
Yes, absolutely.
What would you? What were you? If you were going to Google this right now, what would you Google?
So I came across a tweet that just said, "For verification, enter Gates hack into Twitter." And I did, and I saw a shitload of tweets about it. You know, I don't. You know, what does that prove? I guess. I mean,
are you saying if you wanted to run it through a search engine, Bird?
Well, I've been. This is as we've been talking. I've been running different queries through the search through Google.
Are you looking for the documents?
No. I've been testing something that I was telling
you. He wants to know just how we could actually find it.
Actually, at this time, also what I've been trying to do is figure out whether or not they're suppressing search queries.
And
if you search Gates hack
on Twitter,
I've seen
a couple of my Telegram groups, like some people have posted websites that I am not going to click on have, you know, one of the guys in one of the Telegram groups was snooping around, and according to him, it looks legit. But.
So we got, if you search Gates hack, that seems to work, right? You can search Gates hack, and the first thing that comes up is an article from Vice from an hour ago that says neo-Nazis are spreading a list of emails and passwords for Gates Foundation.
That lends some credibility.
So Jesus, that's the first thing that comes up when you search Gates hack, is that neo-Nazis are doing this.
Well, right. I mean, which to me lends it credibility. That's the first move, right? That's the go to your.
As soon as you hear that, you know something
might be up.
Well, and let's clarify here: the leaks did come from what website? 4chan. So this is not something outside of the realm that Vice would call 4chan anyway. So,
true.
Right. But it is funny
that's exactly the credibility, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I saw the Daily Stormer getting credit for it, then yeah, I'd dismiss it.
Right. Those are actual neo-Nazis. But I mean, in the colloquial, you know, you might as well at this point throw 4chan into there with the way people use the term.
But that's just it. You know, if a colloquial one says, you know, like if a prog shit.
There should be no such thing as a colloquial neo-Nazi, really. Like, there should be, because it is a specific belief system, and even still, it's a very extreme one. There really should be no colloquial neo-Nazi, but there is, unfortunately.
Right, because prog shits are what they are.
That's what they are. Let's, we got breaking. This is tweeted by Mike Cowdery 3 hours ago. I can't get the actual time because if I go in and click on the actual link, I've been blocked by Mike Cowdery for one reason or another.
You know, I hate finding those random blocks like that. Hate it.
Yeah, weird that I've been... I don't know. You know, you put in one word and they block it. Anyway, breaking. It is being reported that Gates Foundation, World Health Organization, and Wuhan Institute of Virology, which is a crazy group of three, car, and if somebody's working for all three at the same time, it needs to tell you something. Have been hacked and thousands of emails, passwords, and documents have been leaked online. So that's what we know. All we know. A great tweet from Ben Manick, who was the one who penned the Vice article. So the Gates Foundation continues to be the target of far-right conspiracy theories, and we found a neo-Nazi Telegram channel with links to terror groups. I gotta read this article.
So not only they're Nazis, but they're also terrorists.
Listen, it doesn't matter.
And they probably do drugs and have AIDS and are changing the climate as well. It's like the ultimate bugaboo, the ultimate gremlin. Climate-changing Nazis.
At the end of the day, the truth shines lighter than any darkness, and someone is going to scrub through this, and if they actually find something that sticks, the general population will believe it. They believed Epstein. They will believe
that's
this,
true.
Too.
Man, that's
you know
true.
We're finally in an area of fucking wokeness.
I don't think we are. To be honest with you, Paz, that Epstein thing was so poorly done that it's obvious to people that something happened, and this would be too if it really... Listen, you have to be able to persuade the general population, and I'm okay with that. When you get the smoking gun, that's a really satisfying thing, and Epstein was the closest thing we've gotten to a smoking gun that something's up. If this comes up as something close enough to that, and the general population believes it, I'll be very satisfied. I'll be very happy. Yeah. But otherwise, business
is
fucking
usual.
Even
if the work that we do... The amount of gaslighting and the control apparatus in the media virtually ensures that a smoking gun is literally impossible.
I don't know, man. Epstein was close.
You might have the smoking gun, but nothing will happen.
You don't
absolutely
know yet.
Nothing,
it's this is a process.
Beyond
it's a process.
Beyond the average American scope.
That's right.
Maybe.
But Epstein was part of the process, right? Epstein was a wall being broken down for a lot of people, and the eyes being opened for the first time for a lot of people. We'll get more of those because inevitably, with the internet as it is, and with more people, especially now during quarantine, I'm sure the coders and the hackers are going wild. This is just going to become... Listen... The internet has provided us with a light source, and people are willing to point it at stuff, and the light source only gets brighter the more people contribute to it. So we will inevitably find more aspects of the fuckery that's been going on, because the fuckery's not going to stop. What are we going to say? Did the fuckery start in the 1940s? No. It's been going on forever. It will continue.
Here's the other thing, too, is that, like I was saying earlier, there might be a tremendous amount of economic incentive for people to understand what happened, unlike Epstein. Yes. Epstein, people's lives don't change. They just get grossed out that there were pedophiles in various power structures that they don't understand. People understand that they lost their job. And, you know, I'm not saying that everybody's going to immediately, understand what the hell happened or be willing to look at it. I'm just saying that if this is a smoking gun, in a similar fashion that Epstein was, when you also add in the motivation, the rational self-interest motivation of I've lost my job and I can barely pay my bills, maybe you got something a little bit different, or maybe they just print money and pay people's rent and they try and blunt it that way. But it will affect the course of action. I think that one way or another, this week, if verified and if anywhere near Epstein level, it will affect courses of action. In what direction and how, I don't know, but it will affect courses of action.
In a more individual level too, it also is like, again, like you say, this just more incentive now to go and find stuff like this.
Yes.
And on the individual level, a story like if it was in fact true that HIV genomes were spliced into coronaviruses, even if it was for the purposes of developing an HIV vaccination, even if it was for that, that's scary. That's a scary thing that I
think frightening.
A lot of people don't realize that these bioweapons facilities exist in the first place, let alone understand what they actually do inside of them, because we don't even understand.
Let alone realize that they are actively splicing shit together like this in the first place.
And
this would not be the first time they've tried a project like that anyways.
No, in fact, back in 1981 under the Reagan administration, there was an experiment with creating HIV and AIDS in a Canadian's bioweapons facility.
That's absolutely right. In Alberta, Canada, it was at the Twombly Medical Center. That's right. I've been doing a little bit of research into that. Actually, I've been doing my own hacking and leaking, and I think I'm going to have something to present to the public pretty soon. So I'm excited for that one.
That's exciting. Yeah, we'll have to do something on that.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting. Remember the name Hugo Valentine, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So what I mean to say is, on a personal level, the incentivization of this, the hacking and stuff, people are going to make their bones on this. Like, this is the stuff that the next Seymour Hersh makes his bones on.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
So I'm looking for, because people believe Seymour Hersh, and now a lot of people, for example, don't know MKUltra happened, right? But the minute that you tell them about it, and you show them someone like Seymour Hersh, and the fact that the New York Times corroborated this, they go, oh, okay, so it's a real thing. That'll happen. If you get good enough info, it'll happen. So hopefully we find somebody who's good enough at getting any info. And look, someone's going to scrub through this thing. You know it. Because this is a honeypot of
weaponized autism.
Oh my God. People hate Bill Gates. People hate the WHO. People think this virus facility, this is where they created like the thing that they're going to use to kill the whole world. Somebody's going to scrub through this thing with that level of interest.
I have no doubt that there are probably at least several thousand people already doing exactly that as we record this.
I was going to say, what day is this? This is, all right, so this is going out tomorrow on the 22nd. Yeah. By tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, forgive us if things completely change and it turns out this story is completely fake, or it turns out Bill Gates, I don't know, eats kids. I don't know. We could find any number of things that come out of this. So forgive us if it's not accurate right now. But, Carr, this is going to be something we need to, you know, keep the peepers on.
Yeah.
No. If they discover that this was purposely spread, which is one of the things that's supposedly in there, then you're going to see calls for war with China.
100%.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
Well, that's where the disinfo portion of this comes 100%. In. You know, because they've been ginning up the war machine for China for several weeks now.
Yeah.
So you need to be aware of the possibility that the freaking spooks are behind this.
Yeah. Like, here's the weird thing. Here's the weird thing. Chicken and egg. Because, like, China's been ginning up trouble with us. We've been ginning up trouble with China legitimately and then illegitimately on the side. Russians and Iranians and Chinese and Americans and probably Canadians and British and French spies have been just littering the field with disinformation at the same time as genuine hatred between these two countries is being fomented. Like, at what point is there going to be like, all right, we need to go to war with this country? How do we consider
I expect it by the end of the summer.
Do you? I just can't imagine.
I'm not saying the war actually happens, but I'm saying you get the overt war calls.
Who's been calling for war already? I mean, somebody, who was it that said we were going to go and bomb China? Somebody to go and.
I don't know. I haven't seen any of those takes personally.
Oh, I have. No, I've seen. Yeah.
New York on retard.
Yeah, yeah.
New York on retard.
No, I've seen it building up for a while.
So let me throw some old geopolitics at you. Not too old, but old enough.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember hearing about like the Spratly Islands and the Scarborough Shoals?
By the way, before we continue, I love the fact that the GFY think tank guy is asking us to consider some things about global geopolitics. But continue.
Yes, we will consider. Thank you very much for bringing these things
up. So please
for your consideration, I'll submit.
Aaron, the think tank guy, please continue. What was the name of the towns?
Do you remember back in like the early 2010s, hearing about the Spratly Islands, Scarborough Shoals, that area of the world, like kind of north of the Philippines in the South China Sea? And we're always sending our warships there to do like transits.
Just to do
freedom of navigation.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maneuvers and all that. The whole thing with them is that there is most likely enough mineral deposits there that whoever has control of that and can exploit them will be the richest country in the world, like by far. like trillions of dollars.
But money doesn't matter. Like we entered a new, like we entered a whole new era, Aaron. Money doesn't matter for us anymore. Well, we're in the zeroth generation now. We're not in the first world. We're not in the second world. We're in the zero world now. So money doesn't matter for us. But you know, I'm following. If you want to try and, I guess, make a point or something,
If it did, great point, Aaron.
If it did matter,
it
for instance, great point, true. Aaron.
Poor point. Yeah.
So now, if I can actually just be a little bit of a contrarian, as much as we want to jack off about the U.S. fiscal outlook, you know, that's exactly how they fund their gibbs, though, by being able to leverage resources into military power, which enables them to get away with funny money being what it is.
That's right. Well, China's doing the same, precisely the same thing.
It's true.
And resource stripping Africa.
So
it's just same as the old boss.
Yeah, it's new man. Yeah.
Since that area has been in the news, we haven't had any type of real recession. That was like around the time of the quote unquote recovery, like 2010, 2011.
Which never actually happened in the country.
But if we actually do end up in a actual recession or depression, which is looking more and more likely.
Are we not in one? See. I guess next week we'll find out if we match the unemployment numbers, right? Because I was going to say, because this, what are we at already on Tuesday? Oh, in 2 days. So the day after this episode releases, we'll get our next set of numbers. And I think we're already in the 20s, right?
Yeah, it's like it's that? Fucking
well, when's
ugly
the next
already?
Quarterly reports due?
I don't know, but every Thursday is the unemployment figures are released. I don't know when the, let's find out. Next fiscal quarter begins.
Well, we're already in quarter two, so it's going to be a while.
Oh, are
now.
We? April 1st through June 30th is Q2, so yeah, it just started.
Yeah, so by Q3, we'll probably be in either a really bad recession or a straight-up depression.
Yeah, I
if
feel...
If this continues on, not even if this continues on, we're already there.
Enough
investments, enough value's been destroyed or corrected
forcibly corrected.
Yeah.
And now, since we're on this subject, before we get to the main topic here, which I'm glad that we had some pre-discussion because I feel like we haven't done this in a while, but Carr, and I don't want to enlist you for this, so if you find a better way of doing it or a different way of doing it, a lot of our listeners, and I know this because, first of all, I don't, and second of all, I asked a lot of people about this and none of them knew it either. So oil futures did what they did yesterday and are continuing to do what they do today. Don't mean to enlist you at this moment. We could go right to the topic if you want. Maybe this could be a teaser for the listeners. But if you want to do it right now or give some kind of an explanation of what's actually going on, because I went to you and it was very helpful. So if you could feel like you'd do that off of your head now, I would appreciate it because I think a lot of listeners
I'll just
don't quite get it.
I'll try and condense it. So basically, manufacturer people that are involved in oil. One way or another, whether they purchase it to make a product like plastic, or if they're a refinery, or if they're a driller, or whatever, often use futures contracts to mitigate risk. So that means that if let's just say I have a product that it takes me 6 months to build, and it requires oil, so I'm making like a plastic, I don't know, car fender, whatever it is.
Sure.
Over the course of that 6 months, there may be risk. If the oil price spikes, like let's say I see a hot war breaking out between Iran and Russia, and like that's going to spike oil prices. What I can do to mitigate that risk is I can actually buy futures contracts that settle in 6 months or 3 months or 10 years or whatever the product may be, so that if oil prices go up and I go long on that future, I possess contracts for more oil. While I'm losing money in profit because the cost of production went up, I'm making money on the contracts. So that's it's a way to mitigate risk. And you can also take out short contracts. So you can bet on the price of oil going down. Let's say if you are on the supply side of oil and you're selling it to people, if the price starts to drop, you're going to be losing money there. But if you're hedged short on oil contracts, you can hedge your potential losses if you think that oil price over some certain period of time. So at the end of that contract, and all of those contracts have an expiration date, whether it be 1 month from, you know, it clears in a month or 3 months or a year or 5 years. If you don't buy or sell or clear out of that contract before that date, it expires, and whatever position you have is the position that you have. So if you're long contracts, it means that you actually are purchasing oil, because those contracts settle physically. They don't settle via cash. Right. So if I'm long 10 barrels of oil, and I was just using that to hedge, you know, whatever my risk of cost of business is, and I let that contract expire, I actually have to buy 10 barrels of oil and physically store it.
Right.
Now, the big boys that are all playing in this market all probably have handshake deals with a bunch of other people that it's like, hey, I got to buy all this shit. I've got a bunch of risk. If this thing expires, can I just store it at your place? I'll throw you $25 a barrel. Whatever it may be, they've got handshake deals, I'm sure. But for other people that are possibly speculating in the market or don't have storage facilities or aren't for storage, if it expires, you've got to fucking store it. And that cost of storing oil is very, very high. So what you saw yesterday, there's a big expiration date today. So it'll be yesterday when everybody's listening to it. And people were just mass exiting out of this contract because the demand for oil has been so low that all of the storage facilities world so full that there's no place to store oil. Now,
is that why they went negative?
Yes, because if, let's just say, it costs you $40 to store oil for a month,
mm-hmm.
and what are you going to be willing to pay
yeah.
to not have to do it? $39.99. So that, you know, that was what the action was yesterday and today probably too. I haven't checked them today, but it's people trying to get out of this contract before it expires so they don't have to physically store oil anywhere because there's nowhere to store it because there's no demand clearing out the warehouses. They've all been stockpiled.
If I can ask something here, just kind of tease out some information, maybe. My understanding of this situation too is that this big blow up is only on contracts over the course of the next month or so, and that the June market in oil futures is still pretty healthy at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it'll just be a month-to-month deal as all of these contracts tend to clear around what appears. I'm not an oil futures trader, but right. I'm familiar with futures contracts. It looks like most popular products clear around the 20th or 21st of every month. So
most of it is month to month like that, though.
Well,
because I did just find it curious that people kept saying it's about May contracts when they were.
So, right. So
it's the fulfillment in May, right?
The contract that cleared yesterday or cleared today, you have to collect in May. So the contract clears today. I think you have to collect in May. That's the deal. It's a month later. So, sure. but what happens is, so today contracts cleared. Those could be monthly, 3 month, 9 month, year-long contracts. Like, so the contract that somebody bought on April 21st of 2019, the year-long contract expires today. The month-long contract that somebody bought on March 21st of this year expires today. So like it's a bunch of different products that are expiring at the same time that are maybe different products, 1 month, 3 month, year. So every 20th, May 20th, we're going to go through this again if in fact the cost for storage is very high because the lack of demand for oil is not clearing out the storage.
That's right. And now I saw some people expressing doubts that June is at $22 right now. And I saw one blue check with a lot of followers, but a blue check who didn't seem to be that bad off, who said that's very optimistic that it's sitting at 22. So even at least someone who seems to, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, people are probably going to sit in it for another 2 months if they don't have to clear out. Probably down. Like, that's the thing, is probably a lot of the contracts that expire in June are probably deep underwater. I mean, deep.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is people are so leveraged. There's always a lot of leverage in these products that start to move that needle down, it'll trigger what's called a long squeeze. And that means it'll actually liquidate people, which forces them to sell because they can't cover the losses.
Yeah, can't store it. Yeah.
So, right. And this can happen to the long and short side. It's just a short squeeze or a long squeeze. And that's what happened. That's largely what happened was that that price for that May or April expiry started to move down and move down and move down. And people are so damn leveraged that they weren't able to cover the margin of what they were trading with. And so their broker actually just liquidates everything for them and takes all their money that they have.
That's not even just futures, though. That's
no, it's that's an every
American economy right now is that over leverage credit problem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All products offer leverage, and it's not necessarily in itself a problem because who cares? You know, some idiot that was leveraged to the hilt on oil contracts lost a lot of money.
Yeah,
and then somebody who's leveraged to the hilt to the short side got a lot of money. I mean, money has been destroyed here.
That's right. I was going to say, Carr, you had mentioned that. So the only issue, I guess, is the implication is whether how you feel about where the money is going. It's not. There's not new money being created, and there's not old money being destroyed. The only opinion one could have is, you know, whether depending on whose the money is going to. So it's
sure. It
not
depends
really
on how you feel about it all getting funneled into institutional investment banks.
Well, what I was what where I it's need all to going. Say is there's no necessary immediate outward implication of this. This is still money that was already in the market, just shifting place. It's not
right. They're sloshing around for now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily one of those things where you can identify one or two players and be like, oh, they instituted.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know.
It's very, very complex and interwoven. But certainly one of the lines that I was looking at is you know, who gets absolutely killed when oil goes down? And A, it's Russia. And mm-hmm. B, it's OPEC. It's OPEC nations. I mean, yep. They just get absolutely rocked. I mean, they have a lot in reserve. And they're all relatively wealthy, at least the people that run them.
Wasn't Russia doing something with its oil recently too? Wasn't Russia playing games recently?
Yes. Well, that's a lot of what kicked this off. They got into a price war, which pushed people underwater on their contracts.
Was it with OPEC, Saudi Arabia, or I don't know if Saudi Arabia deals individually or
OPEC. Okay. It was
and
Russian.
All those OPEC countries, they have an oil dividend that they give to their populations just to kind of buy off their discontent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if those go away, then you're going to see, you know, an Arab Spring type situation.
Aaron, why was there a price war on oil going on right before this between OPEC and Russia?
They're always at it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Russia
lost 40% of energy to Europe.
Yes.
So in the normal circumstances, this would not have necessarily contributed to any sort of like.
No
problem in context, but the fact that to this, the fact that oil really isn't being used right now,
it's a perfect storm.
I see.
It basically just teed it up. Like,
so basically anytime there was going to be a mass shutdown of like movement of people, and this was inevitably going to happen at Russia, then it was inevitably because of the fact that they were just at war like this all the time. This was just going to happen in a circumstance where the world shut down. I guess they just weren't counting on the world shutting down.
Yeah, I mean,
right. It's that sort of brittle inability to assess risk on a global scale.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Russia is relatively unaffected by coronavirus, though.
Really?
Like,
that's interesting.
Like, for real, not like China unaffected.
Just smoking
like
and drinking out. Doesn't bother me. No, it's okay.
Vodka disinfects their just esophagus, a cough. Kills the
I've
virus.
Had the, I've had the cough since I was 3.
Yeah. Corona, I know it well.
I know it well. Oh man.
But yeah, I mean, that's something to watch, is because as long as this goes on, Russia, I don't know what percentage of Russia's exports is petroleum based, but it's a ridiculous percentage. I mean, it's a joke. That's something to watch, that if the price of oil is going to sit on the floor for a while, Russia is going to probably need to get drastic in doing something, and I don't know what that something is.
Oh, that's
a joint currency with China.
It's always
it's acquiring some cheap oil operations in the Middle East, because that's the other thing too. Remember, is the cost of extraction in Russia is very, very high compared to other places. It costs them a lot to get the oil out of the ground. So that floor that they're profitable at is way higher than OPEC nations.
So then I guess this goes for all of you, because this isn't really about futures anymore, but it's kind of, what are the geopolitical implications of this, the global implications of these futures tanking? Does anything happen geopolitically? Do militaries have to slow down? Like, what happens? Does anything happen?
Look, so I'm going to throw this out here right now. We talk about OPEC being so heavily involved in this, But what the fuck's going to happen with Venezuela then? Because I just want to bring up that the neocons have been staring at Venezuela for 3-4 weeks now.
Right.
So this does what to Venezuela? This continues to tank the economy. What's happening?
Yeah.
And that sets you up for some bad actors. So these the tanking protests going on.
The tanking of the futures is what fucks up the economy, or the ensuing inability, or the ensuing war from.
Well, both, but there's two things. Kind of put the futures aside, because that's like a trading mechanism that's gonna fuck a lot of people.
So they're really, but it's gonna fuck like the environment. It fucks its own environment, whereas a war could potentially fuck things outside of its environment.
There's a third thing here. Uh-huh. Forget the futures, just cost of oil. Like, what does that cost? And when the cost of oil is so low, just the cost, forget the futures, forget everything else, just what does it take to go out on the market and buy a barrel of oil? When that's low, Russia is fucked and Venezuela is fucked. And there's a couple other people that are fucked, but those two are probably candidates 1 and 2. Because they're like Russia. I think it might have been John McCain, but he described Russia as a glorified oil refinery. And I mean, he was dead on accurate for that.
I was going to say, do the Saudis get affected, or is it really the fact that like the oil money only
OPEC would be also fucked?
OPEC is affected, and for sure, especially when it's this low. But the cost of extraction for them is very low. So if I'm just going to make up numbers, but if you can sell a barrel of oil for $15, OPEC's cost of extraction may be $10. They're profiting hand over fist, whereas Russia's cost of extraction is probably $40. So they're losing money hand over fist. So that's why this flex game between Russia and OPEC goes on. Is every now and then the Middle East says, yeah, we'll just lower our oil prices, we're still profiting, or we'll even take a loss for a while, and Russia absolutely bleeds out.
A lot of stuff. Well, as long as there's no long-term geopolitical implications, I guess then we'll see what happens. But like you say, the longer this goes on, the more likely there's just something's gonna have to happen. So we'll see. Posmandius, welcome to the show. 40 minutes in.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. This is a throwback to Milk Smugglers, huh?
Uh-huh, sure is. It sure is. So we had you on today to talk about Benjamin Franklin. So tell us, what do you like most about your favorite founding father?
Yeah, you know, I personally enjoyed the fact that he was a Freemason, a Satan worshiper, and was caught with all sorts of child skeletons under his home in London.
Is that right?
Yeah, they dug up like 4 of them.
Oh, no, come on. Please don't tell me that's true.
No, that's absolutely true. Doing
is
excavation
this,
on
is this
his,
Benjamin?
Yeah.
So you what know, was it? Did he have a? So he had a bunch of children. What's the deal?
Those skeletons could have been there before he bought the house. Uh-huh. They could have been legally acquired for his medical research, or he could have been doing Satan worship or shit.
See, this
all
is crazy.
That none of that's known. I'm just saying that his house in London had child skeletons under it.
This is crazy, because this is not even the conspiracy theory we had you on for. And now all I want
to
do is...
No, but I had that ready to go in case you tried something clever.
Did you really?
Let's give Benjamin Franklin the benefit of the doubt, because he was very interested in anatomy. And back in that day...
No,
the experiment, the anatomical experience were maybe a little bit ethically dubious.
Uh-huh.
So that's probably it.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. They could have been medical cadavers.
We've got Benjamin Franklin Homer over here.
Well, I mean, there's no indication from anybody.
Step up
and
for
this
my
is
boy.
Listen, Benjamin Franklin was pretty much in the full light of history. There's no indication that Benjamin Franklin was a child killer in any respect. There's no indication of this, but it's...
Well,
but
except for the 4 skeletons beneath
the... Yeah, but he could have also just been a scientist. These kids could have been dead homeless kids. And,
well, if
you
want to play with the preponderance of evidence, though, I would also point out that he was a member of the Hellfire Club.
What is that?
Yeah, but he was a wealthy Mason. Of course he was.
Oh, I just remembered what we came here to do. We got to get on topic here.
Well, I don't know, but now I'm so fascinated. I guess.
I am kind of fascinated, but I'm just saying we've got to get to this topic because I'm fascinated by that too.
If you can connect the dots between Charles Skeleton and Benjamin Franklin,
all right, yeah, go ahead.
Canadian bioweapons facility making me, I'll be very impressed.
We go through an old notebook.
I'll need a little bit of time for that. I promise that'll be my next project then.
Okay, so you guys tried to pull a fast one.
So we've got a.
That reminds me of that meme. Like you called someone called the ambulance, but not for me. Pause pulling Ben Franklin out. Oh no, I'm unprepared. Someone call an ambulance, but not for me.
I'm just gonna stick with the theory that it was Victorian era England and that there were so many poor homeless kids dying of starvation that Benjamin Franklin didn't need to kill any of them to find bodies to do anatomy experiments on.
It was too good of an opportunity.
The children were practically walking into his basement.
I was gonna say, why do you think so many of our founding fathers went over to England? They hated it over there, but you know, it was great anatomy lessons and stuff.
That's where the adrenochrome harvesting was
happening. Much like you explained about OPEC versus Russia, in the US the price of getting human child cadavers is much higher than in England. So, you know, you go over to England, you get your cadavers, you do your experiments.
Extraction costs are way less.
That's right.
Yeah,
the cost is
yeah, they just lower that cost of extraction.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say it's practically zero. They just die on the streets.
Well, that's exactly what the NHS is for, right? Lowering the cost of child murder.
Christ almighty.
Oh. Okay, let's get into it. Pause. The Franklin, what are we calling it? Network scandal?
You know, it goes by a lot of names. You can call it the Franklin cover-up, the Franklin scandal, the Franklin Community Federal Credit Union cover-up.
Let's just say this happened in, the mid-1990s, this did not happen in Benjamin Franklin's time, if I just confused anybody.
Very, very correct. So the first news, or the first signs that there was something amiss and something was going on came in the summer of 1988.
Uh-huh.
The formal actual investigation began in the winter of 1988, and the trials, and I should say sham trials, that came after it were all concluded by the end of 1990. Okay. However, there were civil trials going on in regards to things that came out and happened here up until like 1999 or so.
Uh-huh.
So the true time frame is about 88 to about 90.
Okay.
But the real ramifications of it are about 1988 to 2003 or so.
So what is it? What should we know? What do we probably know? Why have I never heard of this?
Well, you've never heard of this because this is legitimately one of the most effective political scandal cover-ups in American history.
Oh, man. Okay. All right.
Yeah, definitely top three. And as much as we love to fuck around on this show, I would please ask your listeners to do some independent research with the information we'll give you. And please take this seriously because this is something fucking else entirely.
Okay. So that's got me thinking about what it is. What is it?
So, now, all of this being said, what happened is there was a small little federally insured credit union in Franklin, Nebraska, or Lincoln, Nebraska, rather. And it was called the Franklin Community Federal Credit Union. And the manager of this place was a gentleman by the name of Lawrence King Jr.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And this gentleman happened to be a well-connected Republican. He wasn't a politician in his own right. He was like a Republican booster. You know, he would fund campaigns. He would go to events. He would do all of these things. And he actually sang the national anthem at two RNC conventions in the 80s.
No shit. Is that the case? Do we have audio of this?
You can look him up singing it, yeah.
What's his name?
Lawrence King Jr.
It's King Jesus.
We don't have enough national anthems on this show.
We really don't. Let's do this.
So, do you want me to wait on you while you do that, or should I keep going here?
No, keep going.
This dude is just juiced up to the nines, despite the fact that he's literally nothing more than a credit union, you know, a bank manager.
Right.
And now he initially gets busted for the alleged embezzlement of $40 million. That was being literally laundered through this location via grant money, false grant applications, bad loans, bounced checks, all this other stuff. So this bank manager gets busted for embezzling $40 million. And then things start getting weird because an infamous charity also located there by the name of Boys Town starts receiving reports.
That doesn't sound good.
Boys Town
starts receiving reports of child abuse. And all of a sudden, concurrent with this embezzling investigation, there becomes reports of all these abuse that are tied to that same name, Lawrence King. Now, where things get even more weird is the local police, local Leos, just flat out refuse to investigate this.
Weird.
The local police chief at the time was a guy named Robert Wadman. Let me check my note sheet. It's on here somewhere.
Robbie Wadman.
Yeah, Robert Wadman. And this guy says there's absolutely nothing here. The local paper says there's absolutely nothing here. The FBI office there refuses to get involved, despite the fact that this embezzlement was happening with federal grant money.
Okay, so that would qualify them.
Yeah, that would have been their jurisdiction.
Or would that be the them or the Secret Service?
You know, it hardly even matters. The point of the matter is that the local FBI office wasn't doing anything about it either. The federal Leos didn't want to be involved is the point. Yeah. You know, no law enforcement was working on this. And so it fell to Nebraska state level officials to investigate this. And that's where they got involved. They heard about the $40 million being laundered through a credit union in their state. And they set up a subcommittee of their state Senate to investigate this. Now, on that committee were two gentlemen by the name of Lauren Schmidt and John DeCamp. And now they both got into this thinking, oh, my gosh, look at this huge financial scandal we need to investigate right here in our backyard.
Just walking right into a trap.
Yeah. And so as they get deeper into it, however, they start getting those reports out of the local boys shelter, Boys Town, which I should add, between its charitable donations and federal funding and everything else that goes on there, is actually the richest square mile on the planet. Yeah. So all of this is happening concurrently. And these two Nebraska state senators then start getting reports of all the child abuse. And that's where the thing breaks wide open. They start getting reports and doing investigations. And they eventually find out that Lawrence King, who'd given all this money to Boys Town, who'd allegedly embezzled and possibly laundered $40 million, they find out he had a house in Washington, D.C., that he himself was a pedophile, and that he was allegedly providing children from all around the nation to elite politicians and political operatives out of that house in D.C. Now, where that connects even further is he had known associations with a gentleman by the name of Craig Spence, who was also at the time arranging for gay prostitutes to service political figures. So you've got a pedophile and you've got a gay pimp, both working concurrently with each other in Washington, D.C. And that's where you get one of the star witnesses of all of this, a boy named Paul Benacki. And he claims to have been trafficked by King over a period of years from about 1981 or so to 1986. Now, people at the time and still to this day dismiss him as having made it all up after he started hearing about the scandal in the news from other places. But there are police reports saying that he tried to file these claims and blow the whistle on all this as early as 1986 himself, at about the time it stopped. And so, I'm trying to keep all my thoughts straight here, trying to give you guys a coherent timeline.
I was going
to
say, this seems like there's a lot going on.
There are so many moving pieces here. So Paul Benacki, right, he comes out in 1989. He claims to have been trafficked for about a five-year period or so by this Lawrence King, who would fly him out to parties with political operatives wherever, but primarily D.C., and then in D.C., they would have, you know, these horrible pedophile parties with all sorts of politicians from all over the place on Embassy Row. And several times, Lawrence E. King's partner, Craig Spence, supposedly was able to get them into the White House on guided tours around midnight or so. And so you've got these child prostitutes being trafficked literally into the White House in 1988. Do we have any questions up to this point, or should I keep going?
Because I'm a little scared as to where this is going. Here. I was going to say, I'm a little scared as to where this is going, so no.
Yeah.
You could keep going. I found the clip, by the way.
Of the national anthem?
Oh, okay, I sure
so
did.
So if I can organize, if you want to play that or something, so I can sure organize do. My thoughts here for the I next sure leg. I sure
do. Uh-huh. All right. So this is, what are we going to call him? Pedophile? What is the best thing we can call him?
Scumbag?
Okay.
I don't know. There's a lot of words for it.
So, yeah, whatever the most effective word you want to use for him is, this is Lawrence E. King Jr. singing the national anthem. I don't think anybody needs to listen to any more of that. That was terrible. What was that? Yeah. There was a lot of vocal
flair.
Yeah, there was a lot of vocal trill.
A lot of vibrato.
Yeah, vibrato. That's great. Oh, yeah. Say God. I hope that was enough time for you to organize your thoughts, Paz, because I feel distinctly disorganized.
So, stretch two here. We have this gentleman, Paul Benaki. He's giving testimony during the trial of all these horrible things that happened to him directly under the direction of this Lawrence King, who we just heard singing, and his associate, Craig Spence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as the trial goes on, Craig Spence commits suicide.
Yeah. Oh,
fuck. Now, what do your hands look like when you say that word? Are you maybe doing a bunny rabbit?
Did you mean to say he gets suicide?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I want to. I want to stick to suicide here, just because I don't know.
Okay,
you know, I've never seen any stories of the suicide itself, other than the fact that he did it.
Okay,
that's a all blank right. area. And
so he died. Let's. He yes. is no his longer life, among us.
His life was terminated for some reason and some means.
He is an ex witness.
An ex living man.
Yes.
Okay.
So he's
gone.
And the trial is continuing. They're in the grand jury phase. The Nebraska state legislators, DeCamp and Schmidt, have turned up 70 to 80 witnesses who are willing to give testimony to this grand jury to decide if it should go to trial. Paul Benaki is one of the stars. Another one is a girl named Alicia Owens, who did not at the time know Benaki, but got to know him over the course of the trial. Now, she claims in her testimony that what had happened was she would be taken to these parties as well, but that she was not molested in the same way that the boys were, but rather that the girls, like her, were used as sort of like props or visual aids at these pedophile parties that King was hosting. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the lurid details here, but if you look at the Conspiracy of Silence documentary, which you can find on YouTube, cut up into parts, they'll get into all the details there. And if you listen to other radio shows about this or look for the information, you'll find the details for yourself, and it's pretty horrible. So these are the two main witnesses, the stars of the testimony before the grand jury. And the grand jury eventually dismisses it out of hand. These people did nothing wrong, or the people who are being accused of doing all these heinous things did nothing wrong. It all gets covered up. It all gets buried. Now, Benaki and Owens are both sent to jail for perjury because they made all this up, allegedly.
Mm.
Lawrence King, during this grand jury phase, was sequestered in an insane asylum all the way in Minnesota.
Yikes.
So that he could not be called for testimony during the grand jury phase of this operation. So all of this is over. King is released from the mental institute just in time for this all to be done, of course. And then he does go to jail for embezzlement for 15 years. Let's see. Now, where do I need to go with this next?
Why did they not call him as a witness? I don't understand.
Well, because they couldn't get him out of the asylum.
Why did they... I must have been misunderstood why they sequestered him in an insane asylum.
He was hidden away so that he couldn't be compelled to give testimony during the grand jury phase.
Oh, but what's the real reason? Yeah, what is the given reason?
The stated reason.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the excuse was. They just found reason to tuck him away.
Jeez. Oh, man.
An involuntary commitment or something. So, let's see. It's 1990.
I was going to say, that's pretty significant, right? Why?
Extremely significant.
What did they say? It would be good to know, because if it was involuntary, it would be good to know what doctor, for example, ordered that. Or, you know what I mean? But we don't know.
Sure.
You have no idea?
Sure. Well, I don't. Shit. You know, it's just, a lot of this stuff's, like I said, buried in time. And the very little we do know is what we're coming up on here.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. At this point, the year's 1990. The investigation and the trial have fizzled out. State Senator John DeCamp, at this point, begins working on a book about all of this. And that book is the legendary Franklin Cover-Up. And in the note sheet I provided you guys, there is a link to a copy of it courtesy of Internet Archive.
Ooh, I'll put that in the description.
Yes.
Get everybody reading it.
Shoot. He begins working on this book. His committee has a private investigator under contract, Gary Caradori, investigating all of this. Gary Caradori.
He
ends up dying in a single flyer plane crash, a private plane crash, right? After he had called the other senator, Lauren Schmidt, claiming that he had boxes full of evidence from this Lawrence King's private photographer. His plane explodes in midair over Illinois as he's flying back from Chicago with all of this.
Sure.
On the older models, that'll happen.
Yeah, random exploding plane syndrome.
That's right. Yeah, you've heard.
Well, that's literally what happened. A local farmer was out in his field and saw it happen. His plane exploded.
You can't trust German engineering anymore. It's crazy.
No. Now, within 24 hours of that happening, FBI agents show up at the debris site, comb it over, and then just leave, at which point the FAA or whoever's responsible for those things comes and cleans up the actual wreckage. And John DeCamp continues and documents all of this in his book that he spends the next 3-4 years writing, at which point Owens and Banaki are finally out of jail for the perjury charges they were stuck with, and civil trials begin. And now these go a little bit better for the victims. And at this point, they're forced to acknowledge that these kids were literally molested, and Paul Banaki is awarded a $1 million damages settlement. And during the course of this second investigation, DeCamp comes across another victim, a Troy Bonner. And now this guy was severely mentally damaged as a result of the trauma that had happened to him.
Yeah.
And it got to the point when a second edition of DeCamp's book was released. Bonner had his final mental break in 2003, at which point he walked into a hospital ER with a copy of that second edition, yelling, "This is the reason they're after me." And the next day he was found with bleeding out in that hospital.
Jeez.
So, you know, we've got really all of it at this point. We've got the entire GOP structure in the entire nation. We've got child smuggling. We've got homosexual prostitution. We've got the intimidation of witness. We've got the murder of investigators. And we've got local and federal law enforcement that's willing to do literally nothing about it. It all fell to two Nebraska state senators who just couldn't do enough when their witnesses were counter-accused of perjury and thrown in jail. You know, it's the most effective cover-up in American political history.
I mean, no fucking doubt. It certainly is a cover-up of something. Now, I was under the impression there was some sort of, and I use this term as loosely as you know I'm using it, Satanism involved in this?
So this all was at the tail end of the Satanic Panic. Mm-hmm. And at this point, most people were assuming, you know, there'd just been so many stories over the preceding 15 years or so that by this point, people were finally done trusting children. And that's part of why the testimony fell apart. You know, nobody was believing that these children were actually being molested by people in power anymore. There'd just been too many false stories and too many accusations. But as you get into some of the details of Banaki's and later Bonner's testimony, you'll see that they were talking about there were even occasions when some of the boys were flown out to Bohemian Grove. And some of the more horrible accusations go so far as to say that there were snuff films being made. And both Banaki and Bonner, during separate testimonies, claimed to have been present during the creation of these snuff films. You know, being passed around in rooms full of these old, ugly politicians. Well, what happens, happens in those sort of red room memes, you know?
Right. Jeez.
So there are overt satanic themes, and I don't know just how much you want me to get into the specifics of the testimony of these victims. That's totally up to you guys, but there's some extremely gross stories that
I'm sure it's extremely gross. We don't have to get into that part of it if you don't want to. I'm
comfortable doing it. I just don't know.
Very deep.
If you want to put like an actual trigger warning on this episode,
let's do we just did it. We just did it. So there's your trigger warning. If you don't want to hear about kids getting raped and murdered, then don't continue to listen. So pause, go ahead and tell us what the testimony was.
Yeah, so a lot of it starts out fairly innocently, but as it all winds up, you start hearing Troy Bonner and Paul Banaki talk about how some of these men, a lot of times they specifically mention King, but there's other names that are dropped, talking about how these guys would burn them with cigarettes, how they'd force them to lay with them, as it were, three, four times a night.
Jeez.
And
now, I'm sorry, who is alleging this? Who alleges
this?
Bird? Who alleges this? I just who is our source for this? Is it still from the book?
Well, so you'll find it in several places.
Okay.
DeCamp talks about the testimony in his book.
Okay.
Paul Banaki and Troy Bonner, before Bonner died, also talked about it because they gave the testimony directly themselves and have since.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it. Oh, so Banaki wrote a book, and the other guy wrote a book as well.
No, DeCamp is the only one who wrote the book.
Oh, Banaki did not write the book.
Since been interviewed in documentaries and
stuff.
Got it.
Understood. Okay.
Yes. So, let's see. Where was I? And the final source, if you want to verify any of this, details of the testimony and whatnot, I also linked you guys in the note sheet to a direct YouTube link to that documentary, The Conspiracy of Silence. And they talk about it there.
Okay.
Now, that Conspiracy of Silence was never actually released to the public. It was made by a UK film studio to be aired and distributed over there in the UK. And the Discovery Channel pulled it the night before distribution was set to begin because they got a call from, quote, an unnamed member of the US Congress threatening them with additional regulation if they aired it.
Oh my
gosh.
Now, literally the next day after they got that phone call, the rights for it were dropped, bought by an anonymous buyer, and all but one copies were destroyed. The only remaining copy was a rough cut that was mailed by one of the producers to John DeCamp, who then distributed it.
So do we still have access to that?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I was pointing you towards.
That's on YouTube.
Like I said, it's on YouTube in clips and you can find it there, but it's one of the initial rough cuts of this documentary that never made it to final distribution.
And what was the name of the documentary again?
Conspiracy of Silence.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I got to check that out. That's man, that's wild. The lengths to which everyone was able to go is crazy.
Were there standing senators or sitting senators, I don't really care, or congressmen in general, other than the ones that you named who are like implicated in this?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them. Prominently, you'll see people like Larry Frank, or Barney Frank, rather.
Barney Frank, yeah.
Yeah.
Barney Frank made the list of the accused as far back as the 80s when this all broke.
Wow.
Herbert Walker Bush himself was directly implicated by the testimony of Alicia Owens, who we talked about briefly. Mm-hmm. And there were just all sorts of other people who ended up in it. And to go further back to the 1989 suicide of Craig Spence, you know, he was the one who was allegedly smuggling some of these child prostitutes into the White House once they got to D.C. Yeah. So who knows who all else was even involved?
Sure. Sure. So the final question, because we've talked about Epstein in this episode, and I believe we touched on this somewhere else in the past. This is not at all related to the ring Epstein was running.
No, and this is going to be my personal speculation, so let that caveat be applied to this.
Okay.
Epstein did not get involved with Maxwell or any of those other people until 1993.
Okay.
So it is my speculation that the Epstein network was either unformed at the time or was on standby for when this Franklin network fell apart.
Okay.
My view on the matter is that they probably serviced the same clientele or the same genre of clientele.
Sure.
And that Epstein's network wasn't called into action until the Franklin network got burned by State Senator DeCamp.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's that's a...
You know what? If I can throw even one more plot twist in here for you.
Yeah.
Mr. Paul Benacki, at one point during his testimony, I told you he alleges that he was even flown out to the Bohemian Grove at one point.
Oh,
as we get into the depths of his snuff film accusations, he did claim that at one point Hunter Thompson even directed one of them.
Oh, man.
And as crazy as it sounds,
it doesn't. It doesn't sound crazy. That's the best part.
It lined up because Thompson was at Bohemian Grove the year Benacki alleges it happened.
It doesn't.
Thompson, I mean, I've always thought he was in some senses a limited hangout, but hey, man, at the very, he's a good director, no? That's fucking crazy. Okay, so this was Benacki who alleged that?
That was in Benacki's testimony, yep.
Wow. And so Thompson was dead at the time, right? When did he die?
Thompson died of alleged suicide in 2005, I believe.
2005. So he didn't. So what? We have no known response from him?
Well, yeah. I mean, Benacki ended up in jail on perjury charges.
So they just dismissed it
as a lie. So
I see.
Here. Mm-hmm. This is the pivot from the facts of the conspiracy to speculation and general talk.
Yes.
I would point out that this cover-up and the way they went about it is the perfect textbook example of gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happened here is you take the victims who had been sexually abused and force-fed drugs for multiple years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You accuse them of perjury and you lock them away. So you can say, hey, look at this. We have proof they lied. Well, because they decided they lied.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not they were telling the truth, the powers that be decided they were liars.
Yeah.
Then they let King go down, not for the pedophilia or child prostitution or human trafficking.
Right.
They charged him for the embezzlement that was being initially investigated. So now, years down the line, you can say, well, look at these people who were proven to be liars by the legal standard. They were just accusing this guy who was never guilty of anything other than embezzlement of doing all this other awful stuff. And now all of a sudden it's a fucking conspiracy because of who got charged with what, not because of the actual facts of the case or testimonies. And that is exactly how gaslighting works and exactly how conspiracies are made into what they are, because the powers that be get to set the narrative for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, How many more of these rings exist, Paz? Like 20, 30, 40, 50,000?
Well, look, so I think the political ring, which is what we're talking about here, is probably separate and distinct from whatever pedophile cult is going on.
Yeah, it's not one. It's not mirror. They don't mirror one another for sure.
So there's probably at least two massive ones in the U.S. I expect that the CIA has their own small-scale one for blackmail purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I expect that, you know, most mid-tier and upper-tier global superpowers have several run by their intelligence agencies.
How many of them are? Well,
I would say that the U.S. probably has 3 or 4 major child abuse networks in organization, and then whatever disgusting local ones are organized by your town serial killer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably, I wouldn't be shocked if it's arranged a little bit just like, you know, drug gangs and drug organizations. Like,
I was gonna say, the thing is with drug gangs and drug organizations is they kill one another. You'd think if these were competing networks, they would try and do stuff to one another, which maybe they do, and that's why sometimes people die, and and we don't ever really know why, or we call them suicides. I don't know.
Right.
Well, see, and that's the case. You know, we don't know who killed Craig Spence, whether it was him or someone else.
Sure.
We don't know who killed Troy Bonner in that New Mexico hospital in 2003.
Sure. Yeah, right.
We don't know why Gary Caradore's plane blew up in midair over Illinois.
Yeah.
So it's not like they don't see these interest groups rubbing up against each other and against private individuals who just can't fight them.
Right.
They are just like any other gang.
Yeah.
Right.
They God.
Sure. Aaron, it's what do you think? The moose mindset? What do you think?
Oh, jeez. No. It's not.
This is it's something else.
It's not, honestly, it's not surprising.
No,
I mean, if you think about pre-internet days, what people could get away with.
Yeah, do you think that? I mean, they're still doing it, right? Like all the boomers who still don't know how to use Facebook still don't know how to use Facebook. I'm sure, all the boomers who were parts of pedophile rings are in some sense still engaged, right? They.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, Epstein, the Franklin Network got burned, and then Epstein started up.
Yeah.
Epstein got burned. That doesn't mean pedophilia just ended. That means now there's another network that's been activated. And
don't worry, guys.
Found it.
We did it. We ended pedophilia.
It's not like they're going to go without.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a company declaring bankruptcy and then somebody comes up and picks up the asset.
And buys them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a business, right? It's a business, right? So why wouldn't it follow
it
the same?
It literally is for these people.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it follow the same logic that all businesses would follow?
Crazy.
Well, there you go. Franklin Network, not Benjamin Franklin in any sense. Which is a good thing. Hopefully. Well, maybe. As we learned about bodies, we haven't been able to figure out the source of the
Scarlet
bodies.
Thread.
Whoa, say. I'm gonna sing us out, guys. So if you want to give any pause, if you want to give any plugs, Aaron, maybe if you want to tell us about Go Fuck Yourself Industries, like you're obligated to do.
Yeah,
once
give us an update.
5 episodes. How's your living situation? Is it now that you've, because you're a full employee of GFY Industries, you're able to afford a living space? A Lebensraum, if you will?
The current get paid in for Go Fuck Yourself Industries, which is tiers, unfortunately, is not an accepted form of payment from my landlord.
Yeah, not very convertible.
Sure. No. Did you manage to get your stimulus check, and did you manage to get your rent freezed? There I go.
No rent freeze. I did get a stimulus check.
Nice.
And unfortunately, my employer is insisting on cutting our hours, but still paying us for full time.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So homelessness is just out of reach.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
just out of reach, unfortunately.
Fleeting, but
I keep having good things happening to me, and it's
I was gonna say that's weird. I didn't actually think that GFY Industries was so good to their employees. That's that's great. That's good to hear. And pause, any plugs? And then after that, again, I'm just gonna so just be prepared for that. Maybe you guys, you know.
Okay, pause plugs. Please follow me on Twitter at DogmanRespector. I am a host on the Gaslight Hour podcast. Check us out on iTunes and, I suppose that's the big one. Go find us on Apple Podcasts.
Uh-huh.
That's where we distribute the most of our work. Let's see. Follow my library channel at DogmanRespector2. There's a link to it on my Twitter profile. If you enjoy the work I do, you can donate at the links on my pinned tweet. Bitcoin, PayPal, and Cash App.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool.
Very cool.
I don't think we have any additional announcements. Childerberg is still just everybody.
that was an accident, but that would have been kind of legendary.
I thought you were going to play me out, dude. I was so ready.
Birds getting wild.
Again, Childerberg, we don't know. No idea. Oh, say, can you see by the
early
light? I don't remember the rest of the words.